It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. We've got a great show planned for you today. Happy Friday. You made it. And thrilled to have in studio with me, Rick Turnquist. Rick, it's just always great fun. And people love having you in here. I love having you in here, so welcome.
Well, thanks, Kim. It's always fun and a blast to be here with you on 6 o'clock on a Friday morning.
Yeah, it was a little dicey out there, so be sure and allow a little extra time.
Yeah, allow a little extra time and a little bit extra space between you and the car ahead of you. There was once or twice when I was glad I had the all-wheel traction, but, you know, it's definitely, subpar conditions.
Yeah, and so it's beautiful if you're not out on the road, but Tracy, I mean, we were all scrambling to get here
today. Holy buckets.
I know.
I hope I make it by 6.
I know it. You know, Tracy, it's great to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve, if he were here, he would have, his blood pressure would have been just going crazy.
Oh, my goodness.
So thank you so much, Tracy, for being here covering for Steve. He's out of town. And thank you to our team, to Steve and Zach and Patty and Keith and Charlie for all your great work here. And thank you to you listeners as well. You are treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose. Strive for excellence today and take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. This is a jam-packed show today. In the second segment, we will be talking with Sherry Pfeiff. As you know, she is one of the columnists with Complete Colorado. She is doing such great investigative journalism, but she's written a very important piece regarding municipal broadband. It's taking many forms in Colorado, and the results may be mixed. And this was something when I was on city council, I started to see this real movement. And in fact, the Colorado Municipal League gave those folks that were pushing for municipal broadband a seat at the table at the Municipal League to push forward this municipal broadband. So we're going to talk with Sherry about that. And then Chris Cantwell with Transworld Business Advisors will be calling in after Jason McBride at the bottom of the hour to talk a little bit about this forced minimum wage. Chris Cantwell is in the business broker business, and so we'll talk a little bit about that. So let's go ahead and jump in here. Since, in fact, we are going to be talking about municipal broadband in the second segment. Rick, you know, you and I, we always look at these issues as freedom versus force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. And if something is such a great idea, you really shouldn't have to force somebody to do it.
That's exactly right. And it also comes down to the proper role of government, which we've talked about in the last couple months on this show. And, you know, municipal broadband sounds great. You know, I know that there are municipally run utilities such as water and sewer and electricity and the like, but broadband, that's really not a proper function of government, not a proper use of taxpayer dollars.
Well, it really isn't. And we have private enterprise that is out there. And, you know, I know some people get frustrated on wait times or whatever with some of the different broadband companies. But let's just think about government. You know, on a Sunday afternoon when your broadband goes out, you know, is government going to be there to fix it?
No. And in fact, you know, by the time government gets around to building something, the private sector will probably already have come up with something better and cheaper.
Some new innovation. Yep. And that is the problem that I saw, is if, in fact, these municipal broadband situations, you know, they're put in place, it's a revenue stream, then government has the power then to decide about the new licenses and things for something that might be more innovative. And I saw a real problem with that. So,
yeah, government is force and government is, you know, people think that government's accountable to us in the sense that we elect the people who run the government. But a lot of times those elected officials cede their power to faceless bureaucrats. And we just saw this recently in the town where I live, where there are several ballots on the initiative to take power from the elected mayor and vest it in the town administrator, who's not answerable to the people. So it's a real problem.
It is a big problem. So with that, though, for our inspiration/wisdom today, Tracy, are you ready for this?
I am. I need some wisdom right now.
Okay. Well, now, I don't know if a lot of you know this, but Bill Daniels, right here in Colorado, he was born in 1920 in Greeley. And he's basically considered the father of broadband. And in fact, cable land that he built, he gave to the city and county of Denver. It's right over there, near Alameda and Colorado, and gave to the city of Denver for the mayor's residence. But they have a lot of events there, you know, nonprofit events. And so it's really cool. I mean, he was the father of broadband. His story is amazing. He was an American cable television executive and owner of professional sports teams. He was an early pioneer in building the cable television industry and was known as the father of cable television. Having an interest in sports, he co-founded the Primetime Sports Network and was a co-owner of the Los Angeles Lakers and was a founder of the United States Football League as the owner of the Los Angeles Express. He also owned the Utah Stars of the American Basketball Association. He was born in 1920 in Greeley, and he passed on in 2000. Okay, I'd like to give a little bit of history on this. The other thing, Rick, I don't know if you saw this, but Linda Childers, who is the head of the Daniels Fund, Bill Daniels left a fortune to be used to educate kids. And Bill was also a World War II fighter pilot, great patriot, great capitalist. And what we've seen is that some of these kids that have gotten these scholarships may not really love the American idea. And one of those is Candice DeBaca, who was just elected to Denver City Council, who is an avowed Democrat socialist. So apparently the Daniels Fund has kind of stepped back. This is a private enterprise, and said that we're going to have some questions about, to each of the applicants about how they feel about America. And Candice DeBaca came out, and she's like, this is awful. And I want to just hats off to Linda Childers and the board for doing this, because in the spirit of Bill Daniels, capitalist, entrepreneur, World War II fighter pilot, great patriot, I think that it is a step in the right direction.
And maybe she should give the money back if she objects so much to...
That's what I was thinking as well, Rick.
I was thinking that as well.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a business in my building that actually had a Candice DeBaca sign in their window. And it's a barber shop, and I don't have much hair, so I wouldn't do business there anyway. But if I had to have a haircut, I wouldn't have gone to their shop because they support an avowed communist. And let's call her what she is.
Yeah, an avowed communist. And there's no way that the American idea and socialism, communism can exist. They cannot coexist. It just can't, because communism, socialism ultimately comes down to force.
That's exactly right. And our country was founded on the principles of freedom, which are that, you know, every man, woman, child on the planet has the inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Isn't that great? Bill Daniels would love that. So this is his quote. He says, "When you put your life in perspective, you realize how little time there is to make something truly significant out of it. To some people, this might mean acquiring a lot of possessions, building a business, or owning property. There's nothing wrong with these aspirations, but for me, they pale in comparison to individuals who want to leave something more consequential as their legacy." Is that not truly the American idea? You take the patriots, Tracy, you know, George Washington, they shed their blood to pass on freedom. Gettysburg, I know that Steve was at Gettysburg yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Soldiers that came, in, primarily white soldiers, that fought over this idea whether or not one man could own another. Blood and treasure, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, you know, all these wars and standing against tyranny. Now, I know we're not perfect, but, man, we're the closest thing there is.
And we're literally standing on the shoulders of giants.
You got it.
And, you know, it's an honor to live in their memory and to try to fight to preserve what they left us.
And that's why we do this show.
Exactly.
And that's why you're here, Tracy and Rick, on this cold, snowy morning, is because we care about what we're passing on to the next generation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Tracy, are you ready for the funnies?
I am so ready.
If you're nicer to me about these than Steve, you know what? That's going to be a good thing. So here we go.
Okay. Here we go. Drum roll. Okay. I don't have a drum roll right now.
Okay. Tracy, how many Denver Boulder progressives does it take to change a light bulb? None. They'll just pass a law against light bulbs and then wonder why it's dark. Number two, what do Denver Boulder progressives call illegal aliens? Undocumented Democrats.
Oh.
Number three, what do you get when you offer a Denver Boulder progressive a penny for her thoughts? Change.
That was good.
Okay. On that, a couple of things. Patty, as she goes to work on all this research, and she is just knocking it out of the park. She's got something coming down the pike. I said to her last night, I said, you are a regular Nellie Bly because of what she is uncovering here. But two things before we get to break. Yesterday, we talked about this piece in Chalkbeat, where Colorado has spent hundreds of millions of dollars to help kids read. Now it will spend up to $5.2 million to find out why it's not working. And to Patty's point, she said, Prop CC was for more school funding. When funds can't be accounted for, why should more money be allotted? In paragraph 8 of this Chalkbeat article, it stated the department does not have data regarding how the districts or schools actually use those READ Act per pupil funds, state officials wrote in response to a question from West Ed. And what incentive does West Ed have to end the external audit earlier than 6 years, since they know the money has already been allocated to them? So, Rick, I think you and I both feel that there's going to be an all-out assault on Tabor, Colorado's Taxpayers Bill of Rights, next year. And that is why we have to continue to shed light on what has been going on. They want more money, and they can't even be accountable or have the results that we would want with the money they have. Why on earth would we give them more?
Exactly. And you know, I truly do expect the assault on Tabor to continue. It's, it's never stopped since Tabor was first passed. And the fact is that, on the federal level, I just saw an article in Forbes that said there's like $1.2 trillion in improper payments over the last several years out of, these various entitlement programs. And I'm sure we have those types of payments here in the state government. And last summer, when we were taking a deeper look into the state budget, I saw a lot of stuff in there that we could cut that is not proper functions of the government, before we even have a conversation about healthcare policy and financing. So there's no reason for the state to take more of our money. And, at $32.5 billion, it's going to grow again next year, by another $2 billion. That's a lot of money, and that should certainly be enough money to cover the legitimate functions of government.
And that's the Colorado budget.
Yeah.
Okay. And speaking of that, this piece that you have written by, is it By Any Means Necessary?
Yeah.
That is actually on my website right now at kimmunson.com. That's MONSON.com. But Rick, you have written a number of pieces that are on my website. And if you want to really get your brains around these issues, go through and read those, because the amount of research that you have put into that is absolutely astronomical. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
And one other thing before we go to break, and as Patty and I, we're not quite sure what to make on this, but you probably had seen this headline, and this is from the Denver Post, that money for Hickenlooper's attorney is from a federal fund meant to help the Colorado economy, and it was in post 9/11. So Hickenlooper's attorney is being paid $525 per hour by the government. So that's us. To defend a millionaire former governor, John Hickenlooper's attorney has been paid almost $44,000. It's taxpayer money. It's to defend him before the Colorado Independent Ethics Commission as part of an arrangement that dates back to the former governor's time in office. It's common for Colorado elected officials to be represented by government lawyers or by private attorneys enlisted by the government. But in this case, the recipient of the money was hidden, and the money came from a federal fund meant to help the state after 9/11. Mark Gruskin, a high-powered private lawyer in Denver, was appointed Special Assistant Attorney General in October 2018 when Hickenlooper first faced an ethics complaint into private flights that critics say violated a government gift ban. On October 29, 2018, the then Republican State Attorney General's office sent a letter to Gruskin's office appointing him to the new role. That allowed Gruskin to be compensated by the governor's office for as long as he was representing Hickenlooper, including the time after Hickenlooper left office. The letter was obtained by the Denver Post from two state agencies via the Colorado Open Records Act request. It states the arrangement will continue until the ethics case is resolved or until it is revoked in writing. The Attorney General's office says there's no evidence it's been revoked, suggesting that Gruskin is still being paid by the state. He did not respond to a request for comment. On November 7th of 2018, the governor's office entered into a fee agreement with Gruskin, promising to pay him $525 per hour for his work on the case and pay a paralegal $150 per hour. A copy of that agreement was obtained by the Post through Cora requests. So then going on through this, I would encourage you to take a look at the Denver Post article. But the money apparently that is being used to pay Gruskin is from money back in like 2003 that came to the state via federal funds post 9/11 that was supposed to help boost the economy. Rick, this is about all that we've uncovered right now. Patty's going back to 2003 to figure out what's going on this. But it's like we're trying to connect the dots. We're not quite sure what the answer is, but we thought that it was important that you, the listeners, understand this, and we're going to continue to work on that. Any comments on that, Rick?
Well, it's a great illustration of the swamp at work. You know, we get money from the federal government, you know, what, 16 years ago? It's too early to do math in my head. And it just goes into a state government slush fund, apparently, that's been sitting around all these years that they're saying they don't have enough money to work on our roads and bridges. Or, you know, they were supposed to put it into our economy, which is not a proper function of government anyway. So it's just sitting around in a government slush fund, and then they use it to pay the legal bills for a disgraced former governor with pronounced ethical violations. And let's think about this. People were giving Hickenlooper the use of a private plane in return for what? Isn't that a quid pro quo?
Okay, you have just actually nailed it. We've got to get to Sherry in just a minute, but let's explain what that private plane was. That private plane was Elon Musk's brother's plane. Elon Musk owns Tesla. Governor Hickenlooper put into place, just as he was going out in office, an executive order that basically forces Coloradans to buy electric cars. Who is one of the biggest electric car manufacturers in the country? Elon Musk. This is why we have to keep an eye on this. You think I nailed it?
I think you did.
Okay, let's go to break. Speaking of somebody that goes out and really, you know, looks under the covers on things, and that's Sherry Pipe. She has a very important piece. Incomplete Colorado, it is municipal broadband taking many forms in Colorado. Mixed results make investment risky. This is Kim Munson, The Kim Munson Show. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Bud or Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
How come all the pretty girls like... Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, spelled MONSON.com. Thrilled to have on the line with me Sherry Pipe. She does amazing reporting for Complete Colorado. And be sure and go to Complete Colorado. It is a news aggregator where they actually go and look at news sources throughout the state. And you'll immediately be able to see what's going on. And then if you click on the banner ad at the top, that is where all the original content is. And Sherry had written this piece. It was published November 16th, so last weekend, on municipal broadband. And Sherry, this is something that I saw when I was on city council, this romance with municipal broadband. But you're saying in your piece that the results may be mixed and the investment may be risky. So let's go through this, Sherry Pipe. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Kim. It's always a pleasure to be on with you. You know, this is something that we've been looking into for a while. I've done several pieces on the municipal broadband fascination across the state already. And I've got a gentleman who is at the University of Denver, or Denver University, excuse me, Ron Rizzuto, who has been dealing with telecommunications and companies dealing with that for like the past three decades. This guy is phenomenal. He gets it. He understands. And he looks in, he's been looking into this nationwide, and it's just really starting to show the same trend that we have seen or that we have suspected that we're going to see nationwide, where they started it, you know, years ago, that it's just not everything that it's cracked up to be. And I just, we're trying to figure out what the fascination is with the municipal broadband theory. And I think a lot of it points back to Longmont and the Nextlight program that Longmont launched 5 years ago. Everybody wants to be Longmont, and unfortunately, not everybody is going to be Longmont. And it's putting taxpayer money at huge risk. In some cases, you're looking at the city of Loveland, who bonded over $100 million or right at $100 million without even asking the taxpayers to do it. And proudly boast that they did it because they could.
Just a question. How could they do that with Tabor in place? How could they bond for $100 million?
Because of one of those fun little loopholes that we have in Tabor that allows for them to set up an enterprise fund without asking taxpayers. So that's what they did. They set up this broadband utility enterprise fund, went out, they put their electric. So some communities already have an electric utility. Some communities already supply the electricity to their residents, and they don't go through like an Xcel or anything. And Loveland and Longmont and Fort Collins are three of those communities that have electric utilities. So they bond this money against their electric utility and then put in place another enterprise fund to start yet another utility. But that puts their ratepayers for their electric utility at risk, because if the broadband fails, which we're starting to see is happening nationwide, then the electric utility customers are on the hook for the money that they bonded. And it is starting to fail nationwide, because as with most things, when government gets into it for the long haul and the private enterprise companies finally come after them, they can't afford to continue operating it. They just can't compete at the same level.
Rick and I are both kind of rolling our eyes on this. First of all, on the enterprise zone in Loveland, I know this is a rhetorical question, but okay, who's going to have to pay the $100 million? Is it going to be the planners and the bureaucrats and the politicians that pass this without honoring the people and asking them if, in fact, they wanted to go on the hook in Loveland for $100 million to pledge their electric utility to do that? Or do you think it's going to be the taxpayers that's going to have to pay that $100 million, Sherry?
Oh, well, it's absolutely going to be the taxpayers. And it's going to be, most importantly, the ratepayers to the electric utility who had to put the money up for it. And in some situations in Loveland, there are people who are under a co-op over there, Poudre Valley REA, who don't have the Loveland utility, the Loveland Electric Utility. So those folks aren't going to be on the hook, but they may be taking out the broadband. So it's an interesting, it's a fascinating phenomenon when you look at it, because in a sense, everybody who lives in the city of Loveland is going to be on the hook for this, whether they decide to invest in the broadband or not. They may not want the broadband. And if the broadband fails, guess what? They're still on the hook for it. Doesn't matter. It's still their risk that they're having to take. And they were not given the opportunity to decide whether or not they wanted to take it.
And the other thing is, Sherry, first of all, they didn't ask the taxpayer. And secondly, and then they are using this money. They're using government money to compete with private enterprise. And then they're also the rulemakers. They're the ones that can issue the licenses and can determine, they're basically, you know, have the force of government on it. Rick, quick comment for Sherry, and then we're going to go to break.
Well,
we're going to go to Jason, then we'll go to break.
Yeah, Sherry, thanks. Great article. I just wanted to point out that, you know, you mentioned risk. And so in this case, we're talking about, you know, the government has put the taxpayers or the ratepayers at risk. Whereas with a private enterprise, the only thing that's at risk is the owner's money and the people that have loaned money to that enterprise. So that kind of speaks right there to why the proper role of government is not to be involved in these kinds of ventures.
Correct. And that's one of the things that is so fascinating, is because not only are they trying to do something, but they're trying to do something that private enterprise in many cases has said they can't afford to do. They're trying to give internet or put this massive amount of money in place for this infrastructure in places where people like Comcast and CenturyLink have said, we would love to come in and lay, you know, $50 million worth of fiber so that we can, you know, get 1 gigabyte of service up and down to 3 businesses in your downtown community. But those 3 businesses are never going to be able to reimburse us that $19 million that we invested. So, hey, you know, government, why don't you go ahead and do it? Because I guess that same risk is not there for the government.
Wow. Okay. Hey, Sherry Pyfe, we're going to go to Jason McBride here. Thank you so much. And let's keep me in the loop on this, because this is a really, really important subject. And,
yeah,
and there's
absolutely
all kinds of stuff going on there. So Sherry Pyfe, Complete Colorado, thank you for your good work. And again, you can find that piece at Complete Colorado. And then just click on the banner ad, and then it's in that original content. So, Sherry, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Yep, you too. Bye-bye.
Okay, and just a quick question. Susan Kochevar texted me. She said, doesn't 5G negate broadband? New technology is already being set up. So it's a very difficult situation when you have the rulemakers use taxpayers' money to compete with private enterprise. There's something that's just not going to work out very well on that, Rick.
And it's not a level playing field either. It's not fair.
Oh, don't we like a lot? Okay. Hey, Jason McBride, how are you?
Hey, good morning.
Have you been out yet?
I have not been out yet. Should I stay in?
You might want to stay in. It is a little dicey and icy out there, so be sure and allow extra time if you get out there on the road.
Well, I have another public safety announcement that's even more important.
What's that?
Another important reason everyone should stay in.
What's that?
My daughter just got her driver's license yesterday.
First of all, congratulations. And second of all, that was so mean.
Congratulations.
Yes.
You know how much more I have to worry now?
I actually do. I remember, Jason, when my first child drove off in the car by himself, I remember standing in the middle of the street as he drove off, and I was just praying. Tracy, you probably do that as well, right?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Okay.
Well, you should all start.
Well, we will. We will pray for your daughter, and we will pray for all those kids out there that's driving. But I tell you, it's freedom to get your driver's license, and we like freedom, Jason McBride.
That is true.
Okay, let's jump in here, though. I mean, I cannot believe we are at November 22nd, and there's things that need to be done from a financial standpoint for people to optimize their economic prosperity, their well-being. And, we've talked about estate taxes, also known as death taxes, Roths. How are those two things going to match up?
Well, they can match up. You know, one of Will Rogers' quotes is, the difference between death and taxes is that death doesn't get worse every time Congress meets.
Yes.
But that's not necessarily true. And one thing about a Roth IRA, and I don't mean to be morbid to bring it up, but, if you pass away, if you're married and you leave your spouse behind, the gift that you leave behind for her, and I'll say her because it's usually the guys that go first, is she's going into the single tax bracket, which is twice as bad as the joint tax bracket. So there's another reason that I like Roth IRAs, because they're tax agnostic. They don't care, because any money coming out of a Roth is not taxable. So the more money you have in Roth, the better for many, many reasons, Kim. But again, it's better for your loved ones that you may end up leaving behind as well. You want to leave them something to support them, to make sure they're okay, and not unintentionally leave them a higher tax bill than they had while you were around.
Right. And so that's really important for people to think about that and plan for that. Now, on these Roth things, are there things that need to be done by the end of the year? Refresh my memory.
Well, yes. If you're going to do a Roth conversion, you know, to get money from a traditional IRA into a Roth IRA. And that's the way to, you know, to get a substantial amount in. You do have to do it every year by December 31st. Again, right now, Kim, I mean, we're at some of the lowest tax rates we've ever been at in the history of the country. And if there's one thing that's probably guaranteed to go higher, it's not the stock market, but taxes certainly are at some point. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I say get while the getting's good, because the getting probably won't be good forever.
Okay. So what people should do is give you a call at 303-694-1600. Natalie will be at the switchboard at 7:30. Again, that is 303-694-1600. Or you can go to airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. That's the website that we have together. And get a discovery session scheduled with Jason and your colleagues over there at Presidential Wealth Management. Because if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So,
well, that's for sure. And, Kim, I'll remind everybody, make sure to tune in Monday, because you and I have a very special and fun show coming up, huh?
We definitely do. So should we leave it as just as a teaser? Do you want to tell them what it is?
No, I'd rather leave it a mystery.
Okay, it's a mystery. So be sure and tune in on Monday morning. Jason McBride, thank you so much. Have a great weekend, and tell your daughter congratulations.
All right. Thanks, Kim. Have a great show.
Thanks so much. We're going to go to break. When we come back, I have Rick Turnquist in studio. We'll be talking about your very important piece. It's at my website, kimmunson.com, by any means necessary. But when we get back from break, Chris Cantwell is on the line. He is one of my valued partners, and he's with Transworld Business Advisors. And, you know, we're just talking with Jason McBride about planning. Well, if you have a business, or you want to buy a business or sell a business, Chris is the person to talk to. And I wanted to just ask him a quick question about what are some of these challenges that people face. So this is Kim Munson. It's the Kim Munson Show. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. On the line with me is one of my valued partners, and that is Chris Cantwell with Transworld Business Advisors. Chris, welcome. How are you doing on this snowy Friday morning?
Good morning, Kim. How are you?
I am doing well. Although we are telling everyone it's a little icy and dicey out there, so if you have to get out, allow a lot of time. And as Rick Turnquist, who's in studio, said, he said, you know, make sure there's some space between you and the other person as well. But Chris, you are in the business of helping people buy and sell businesses. And what would you say are some of the challenges of small businesses these days?
Yeah, Kim, thanks for asking. I think the toughest challenge for most employers today, most business owners, is hiring great employees. And the challenge is we have such a great economy and such a low level of unemployment. The talent pool is really thin. And what's good in the market is that drives wages higher. And good business owners are willing to pay higher wages for great employees, right? That solves the problem and the challenge that we have in the market of what's a good wage, a fair wage, or a living wage. But one of the challenges they have, especially in retail and restaurants, is there's a need for part-time employees that are maybe 16, 17, 18 years old that are going to work a few hours a week. It gives them some work experience. But these small business owners can't afford to pay these people a new minimum wage or a living wage, as they like to call it. And in the city of Denver, the current minimum wage is $11.10. There's some proposals going around for what they're going to charge, what they're going to force businesses to pay in 2020. And they want to go from $11.10 to $12.85. So, again, this puts the pressure on these younger kids, 16, 17, and 18, for them not to get some work experience. They're being replaced with technology, going to a lot of these places and kiosks, even in restaurants, fast food restaurants. You're going to go in and you're going to order at the kiosk, because they can't afford the wages for these jobs that are perfect for people to get some work experience at that age level. Now they're going through high school, not working. They go into college. They come out of college with zero
work experience.
Yeah.
Boy, and Rick Turnquist, you see force all over this. You see that force, what it actually is doing is taking away opportunity for these kids to get that work experience. And the other thing, Chris, is if you're working, you stay out of trouble. You know, as a teenager.
Absolutely. Yes, you do.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Well, now, Chris, if people are interested, now, buying or selling a business, I mean, it's not just something you do immediately. It's something that takes time and planning. So very quickly, if somebody is interested in selling their business or buying a business, what would the quick process be to, meet with you?
Yeah. So if you own a business today and you're thinking about selling in maybe the next 2 to 5, 6, 7 years, what we're going to see in the market is a flood of new businesses coming to the market from the seller tsunami or the baby boomer generation that are all looking to retire. So there's going to be some great opportunities, but if you're thinking about selling, you're thinking about an exit in the next few years, give me a call. I don't charge you for any kind of consulting. I'll give you no charge advice. I don't like to say the word free. Give me a call, 844-SELL-BIZ. That's the easy way to remember it, 844-SELL-BIZ. And if you want to know more about buying a business and being an entrepreneur, you can get into a business for as little as 15, 20% down, depending on what you want to invest up front. And there's several ways to do it. So if you've always been curious about entrepreneurship and you want to know about buying a small business, give me a call, 844-SELL-BIZ, B-I-Z.
Okay, Chris Cantwell, thank you so much. And I just love it. You are an entrepreneur, and thank you so much. And thank you for your partnership. I greatly appreciate it.
You bet, Cam. Have an amazing weekend.
Okay, you too. Rick Turnquist, okay, let's get to this piece that you've done. First of all, thank you for being in studio. And the amount of research that you put into these pieces, I mean, this is absolutely fabulous. Let's talk about this by any means necessary.
Well, thanks, Kim. And this piece was actually the product of months, if not years, of just living in the political world in Colorado and meeting people, talking to people, following things going on Twitter, specifically the CoPolitics hashtag. And what really came to me, last spring when I wrote my piece about the progressive advantage, and it's linked on my blog, which is toadvancefreedom.com, where I talked about the progressive advantage and how the left has built up a huge infrastructure here in Colorado, largely funded by the so-called Gang of Four, which is, if you've read the blueprint, you would know that is Governor Jared Polis, formerly school board member Jared Polis, Tim Gill, a billionaire, Rhett Bridges, another wealthy person,
and
Pat Stryker.
And Rhett Bridges' son is in the Colorado legislature.
Yeah, he's a state senator, Jeff Bridges. And then also Pat Stryker, who's a billionaire, who's a beneficiary of the capitalist system, but she inherited her money, and so she didn't really produce it. Yeah. And it's her money, she can do with as she wants, but she's using it to tear down the capitalist system, which is really,
kind of
sad. But anyway, those four people started building out this Colorado Democracy Alliance here in Colorado. That leads to the progressive infrastructure, which, and read, you know, if you want to learn more, read my blog about it. But, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. So after I wrote that, and last summer, after our July show, actually, I went to an event and I heard a presentation by a guy from the American Legislative Exchange Council named Bill Meierling. And what he talked about was how, you know, he talked about how Colorado flipped from red to blue and the role of the Democracy Alliance and all these, you know, so he kind of talked about stuff I already knew about. But then he started putting up these slides about how it works on a national level. And, you know, his presentation is actually linked at the bottom of my article on your website. And, you know, he talked about how all these groups work together to achieve their goal, which is, you know, to implement a so-called, and I'm putting air quotes here that your listeners can't see, but progressive agenda, because it's really not progressive. I mean, I believe that most people tend to live their lives and focus on the things that are immediately important to them, you know, their work, their family, their church, their sports teams, their, you know, other activities, their communities, their interests, and they just don't pay attention to politics, mm-hmm. and they don't really care about politics, and they don't want to talk about politics because, you know, politics can be fraught with anger and distrust and ugliness.
Because power is involved.
Yes, that's exactly right. And you know, I think that's a dangerous attitude because we're living in dangerous times. And the reason we're living in dangerous times, you know, you look around you, everything's great. You know, economy's doing great. The unemployment's lower than it's been in 50 years. And, you know, including record low Black and Hispanic unemployment. And this is all
as well. Low unemployment for women as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, every minority group that the left wants to carve out and elevate is already doing great under in the United States economy at this point in time. And progressives, you know, progressivism is an ideology. It's been around for, you know, a little over 100 years now. It has socialist theory as its underpinning. It has wild and unrealistic goals as its agenda. And if you happen to watch the Democratic debate the other night, you saw that on full display. And it's got children like Greta Thunberg and septuagenarians like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren as its idols and thought leaders. And, you know,
There's anger.
Well, it's driven by envy. And I was at a meeting the other night where the host of the meeting played us a little YouTube video about envy. And it was kind of animated, but it really illustrated how all of their politics is based on envy and a feeling that they've got left out because somebody else has more than they do. And, you know, that's a childish attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that, you know, the progressive ideology is based on childlike emotions and feelings. It's mm-hmm. it's not the product of rational thought, and it's not how adults act. But modern progressivism has its roots in the nation that emerged from the Civil War and Reconstruction in the late 19th century. And they, you know, they looked at the carnage that was the Civil War. And let's think about that. The Civil War was fought to preserve the Union, but also fought to free the slaves and to abolish human slavery on this continent. And, you know, these people, you know, a lot of them were clergy, you know, they thought, wow, you know, we're not capable of governing ourselves. We need smart, capable, talented people to run things. And so they kind of, you know, took their faith out of elected officials and put it into trained and educated administrator type people.
The administrative state is bored.
Yeah. So let's have the smart people run things. You know, if you let Joe Blow down the street to be your city council person, they're not going to know about municipal broadband or water issues or health care or whatever. So let's hire somebody. Let's elect Joe down the street, but let's have Joe hire somebody smart to run things. And you're right. That's exactly what gave rise to the modern administrative regulatory state we have today. And, you know, progressives, you know, they're not content to let elected officials represent all of the interests in their constituents. They want elected officials to represent their agenda. And if elected officials don't do what they want, then they work hard to get them other people elected in their place.
Okay, Rick, let's go to break. But before we do that, I think we need to unpack this just a little bit, this idea that there is somebody smarter that can actually you know, be an administrator instead of our representatives. How that is antithetical to the American idea. You want to talk about smart folks. It was the merchants and the farmers that founded this country. We're going through Vino and Veritas, the study of the Federalist Papers. These were farmers and merchants, and you read it. I mean, Alexander Hamilton did not have a tremendous formal education until later. I mean, he was a brilliant mind. And so there's this, what would we say it? There's an arrogance about this whole administrative situation.
Yes, there is. And I have no doubt that there's many individually bright people who happen to work for government. But, there's also a lot of individually bright people who work in business. And not all of them graduated from college.
I didn't graduate from college.
Well, I know several people who I highly respect that didn't graduate from college, and including, I don't know him personally, but Steve Jobs. He didn't graduate from college, and he built what is now the most valuable country in the world.
Yeah.
I don't believe that Bill Gates graduated from college. I'm reading Andrew Pollack's book about his daughter Meta, who died in the Parkland shooting, and he didn't graduate from college either, and he barely got out of high school, but yet he built a couple of successful businesses and is quite well off economically, from what I understand. So, it has nothing to do with college. It has to do with what you do with your life and the choices you make and the experience you get through your first job that you may not be able to get now because of higher minimum wages. And when you think about minimum wage, just real quick, all minimum wages are is it's making it illegal to hire entry-level people and giving them that first leg up in the job market. And it's really tragic because it impacts young people. It disproportionately impacts young people, and it disproportionately impacts minorities. And, minimum wage jobs are not supposed to be living wage-type jobs meant to support a family. That's why people go to trade school and learn a trade. And some people in trades make quite good money right after a year or so of school.
And they have no student debt.
Yeah, and they have no student debt. Or go to college and get a degree in something like finance or engineering or, anything but gender studies, and they can make a good living. But, pricing entry-level people out of the job market is just a disservice to them, and it actually fosters government dependency, which I think is what they want
ultimately
in the end.
So it's not compassionate.
No.
One of the most compassionate things I think one person can give another is a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so the government's getting in there. I never really thought about it. It makes it illegal to hire teenagers. Oh, my gosh. Rick Turnquist, let's go to break. And when we come back, we'll continue on with this really important piece that you've done, By Any Means Necessary. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, A Study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Denver, and the historic 88 Drive-In Theater for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, A Study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today at KimMunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Zach Brown, I love that. Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. Rick Turnquist is in studio. You have a very important op-ed on my website, By Any Means Necessary. And just wanted to drill down just a little bit more on this premise that the elites, these administrators, that they're smarter than the rest of us, and some of them really believe that, and some people, I think, believe that as well, that they are altruistic, that they're going to want to make good decisions for each of us, and they really care, and they're smarter. What would your comment be?
Well, I think that the the idea behind the progressive theory was that educated people would be able to better dive deep into complex issues and make the best decisions for society about those issues. And, I don't believe that's the case. I mean, yeah, there's definitely some complex issues that face our society, and there's legislation that's hundreds of pages long that nobody has time to read before they vote on. So, I think that's an illusion. And I think that the smart people are the ones who are out there, living their lives, building their businesses, working for their employers, and everybody's, smart to some extent. We're all created equal. Some people are smarter than others. I'm not trying to disparage anybody here. But, I think that the idea of putting so-called smart people in charge is faulty. And it's given us the modern administrative state we have today, which is, it's leading us, now government has its fingers in everything. You can't even open a lemonade stand. Your kid can't even open a lemonade stand, without getting a government permit. I mean, it's getting that bad.
So the really smart people are doing really dumb things.
Yeah. So I think it'd be great if we could just roll back the administrative state and let our elected officials do what they're supposed to do, which is make decisions. And you've been an elected official. You know how that works, and then the elected officials are answerable to voters. If voters like what they're doing, they'll get reelected, and if voters don't like what they're doing, they won't get reelected. But with faceless bureaucrats, we have no way of, firing them if they're doing a poor job. We have no way of docking their pay.
Right.
And now we see that, government jobs pay very well compared to private sector jobs.
Plus the pensions.
For equivalent work, plus the pensions, and plus the practical lifetime tenure. I mean, I work for a private company. If they decide they don't need me, they can let me go. Mm-hmm. But, if you work for a government, chances are,
good luck.
If you
have
chances are that unless you really do something egregious, you're going to have a job for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And, that's great for people that want that security, but it's really not probably the best way to run a society.
Okay, you just mentioned elected officials. I know that you are reading Jason Chaffetz,
I believe it's Chaffetz.
Chaffetz,
but I don't know for sure.
His book, and he was a representative from Utah.
Yeah,
to Congress.
He was elected from Utah's 3rd congressional district. He served in Congress for from 2009, I believe, through 2017 when he retired, and he served when the Republicans held the Congress. He was in charge of the one of the committees. The oversight committee in the House of Representatives, and so he had a really good opportunity to drill down into some of these things. And I had mentioned earlier the progressive infrastructure. Well, kind of tying all that together is I happened to recently to start reading the book by Jason Chaffetz. His most recent book, it's called Power Grab: The Liberal Scheme to Undermine Trump, the GOP, and Our Republic, and he describes how the left in our country have monetized anger and weaponized public charities to fund their dark money network to claw their way into power, that's my words, in state legislatures in the United States Congress. And we saw this here in Colorado with the way they flipped the state from red to blue mostly. There was a little bit of a Republican holdout over several years, but now they control all the levers of government. And just as an aside, if they're unhappy with how the government's budgeting things, then they're in charge. It's really, you want more better roads and bridges, talk to your elected representatives, because they're the ones who
set the
priorities.
But they just want more money and power is what they want.
Oh, yeah. So he wrote this book, and in the introduction of this book, it really is gripping, and that's why I quoted it at length in the piece here. I had never attended, but I had heard about, town halls given by former Representative Mike Kaufman and Senator Cory Gardner, who doesn't have them anymore because all he does is get shouted down by a bunch of, ill-tempered children. And he talks about how he had his last town hall and it was disrupted by the Indivisible group. Mm-hmm. And, the Indivisible guide, it's out there. I've linked it in the piece. you know, tells people how to disrupt, and their audience isn't the constituents who they're displacing to attend these town halls. It's not the representative who they're heckling and harassing and shouting down. It's the national audience. They're, you know, everybody's got a cell phone. Everybody's, you know, can be a blogger, vlogger, whatever. They're looking for that moment they capture where the person the elected official looks bad, so they can hopefully make that go viral. Mm-hmm. And you know, like when Mike Kaufman left a building and he was escorted out, you know, it's just they're really after political theater. That's mm-hmm. all it mm-hmm. is. And then Chaffetz goes on in the book to talk about how, you know, the nonprofit sector in America has really turned into a money machine to promote the progressive agenda. And there's really no counterweight on the conservative side. I mean, there are some, but the left pretty much owns the nonprofit sector, and that drives a lot of you know, what they're doing with regard mm-hmm. to state legislatures and nationally.
And a lot of times these nonprofits have government grants, so they mm-hmm. figured out a way to use taxpayer money to push forward that agenda. So, yep. Rick, important book, huh?
Yeah, it's a very important book, and I've written a more detailed book review on my website. And again, that's toadvancedfreedom.com, and it's called Book Review Power Grab. It's the top blog post, and I'd encourage everybody who loves freedom and liberty to read this book and understand exactly what the left is doing with regard to accumulating, expanding, preserving, and exercising power. And he even talks about the impeachment that's going on right now, and you know, he was largely prescient in how that's going. So it's an important book, and thanks, Kim, for giving me the opportunity to talk about it today.
Oh, most definitely. And again, your website or your blog?
To Advance Freedom.
Okay, fantastic. So quote for today is from Cicero. He was a Roman statesman who lived back in around 63 BC. He says, "A nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and carries his banner openly. But the traitor moves amongst those within the gate freely, his sly whispers rustling through all the alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself." So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you. God bless America.